Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out. And we go for it.
Hey! New York City! How we living? Thank you so much for coming, everyone. Welcome to the Little Field. And us.
Yeah.
This is Timbo reporting in the flesh, live.
Yeah. And this is Guy. Welcome along to the worst idea of all time, season 4, episode 50, live in New York, famously the fifth character in Sex and the City. And can I just say this? I'd like to go on the record. Well, it's the greatest city. We've got people who have come here from somewhere in Virginia. We've got people who have come here from somewhere in Massachusetts. We have someone who's on a work trip from England, and they just so happen to be here at the right time. But all those places can suck one, because New York City is the greatest city. We're going to Chicago. They can go fuck themselves. We're going to Portland. Disgusting. We're going to Los Angeles. What a waste of a perfectly good desert. New York City or broke, baby. Thank you for having us. I'm going to talk to you, Tim. I was going to talk to the masses, but I'd rather check in with you.
All right.
How are you?
I'm real good. And I'd just like to, before we go too further on in the show, introduce our guest for this record. It's the knife. The knife is here. Guy didn't even know.
No.
It's got a sheath. I didn't stab myself. So yeah. This is...
I heard the knife was cancelled.
No.
I heard the knife and I were both cancelled.
False. Just you. The knife lives. This is the... I don't know. How would we... It's like the spirit of the knife is imbued into whatever physical knife we have. So it is the same.
It's never
guest.
Felt like we have a knife, Tim. It's always felt like you have a knife.
The podcast has a knife, and I think it's important to remember that. Now, what makes this one special, if anyone's forgotten, is that it's ceramic.
You've, in a similar technique to what Mr. Big uses when he's chubbing tomatoes, as he proposes to Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City, the movie, you've taken the nib off your porcelain knife.
It kind of took the nib off itself. Someone in my flat was using the knife as a knife, which was baffling to me. Not quite sure how that happened, but the cap came off. So I guess the moral of the story is ceramic knives, not as fucking clean as the Australians would have you believe.
I'm less comfortable with you travelling with an ordinary ceramic kitchen knife than any variety of flick knives or switchblades.
You're less comfortable.
No, this is weirder to me. This belongs in a kitchen in New Zealand.
But you know what the good thing is? Metal detectors, you sail right through.
That's not good.
It's good.
It's not good information to release to the world either.
Yeah, I got
to
stop waving a knife around New York City too. I don't know what the laws are here.
Because I saw you flew in through Honolulu, Hawaii.
Sure did.
And I saw you went...
let's give it up for Honolulu. Yeah. Whee!
No, Honolulu, a perfectly good waste of a goddamn beach. I hate every city, save for this one. But you went to a flea market.
Yeah,
I saw on your Instagram story, you were posting all sorts of videos of various knives.
I was so thirsty, you guys. Folks, I was there for 4 hours, and I looked up. I was just on Google Maps and I saw a park and I was like, you know what? I'm hot. I'm sweaty. I'm disgusting. I'm in Hawaii for crying out loud. I want to go sit in a park.
Yeah,
really
cool down in the heat of the middle of a park.
Well, no, I got confused. I thought it was a national park because they had mixed the photos of what I thought was on the map with this other place that had water and stuff. So I was like, cool, I'll go there. So I got in a cab and I was like, take me here. And he did. It was just some park. It was just some suburban park. And it was closed. It had a big gate on it. I was like, okay, this sucks. And he goes, hey, there's a flea market down the road. Do you want to go to the stadium and see the flea market? I was like, sure. So he just took me there.
I love this whole anecdote for you. Mm. It is.
But what you were getting to is that there was a beautiful cabinet of knives there. Knives the likes I've never seen before. And a guy sharpening them who really looked like he knew his shit. He wasn't like me. He wasn't into like glory knives. He was into fucking proper knives.
Yeah.
Hundreds of knives. I was thirsty as, but...
Probably for a reasonable ticket as well, in a flea market.
They were $100 and up, but they looked proper, and I didn't buy any of them. I regret it? Yep.
You already checked your luggage through?
It wasn't there. It was just a bit pricey for me.
Okay.
I would have found a way, or tried. What would have happened is I would have tried and failed.
Yeah. It would have been like you just going through customs and giving the TSA $100.
Yeah.
All right, so you traveled with a ceramic kitchen knife, which we are to believe, as you insinuated, you flew with on the plane.
Aren't you proud of me, though, that I managed to remember to put it in my check luggage?
No.
Oh. A rarity for me.
What? To pack a knife?
Yeah,
This podcast, it is one of your defining traits.
To make sure that it's not with, like, on my person and taken off me.
Oh, yeah, no, we're all really proud of Tim.
Thank you.
For putting a knife in a fucking suitcase.
Thank you. Thank you.
What is the system of approval you're creating for yourself?
Know. I've been away from my wife too long, so now I'll take any sarcastic praise I can get.
You know, they say,
transform it in my head.
Happy knife, happy wife. I imagine she's in a kitchen with an unchopped tomato right now going, curse you, Tim Bannon.
Absolutely spewing. It feels incumbent on us to talk about the movie at some point.
Does it, though? Because does it, though?
Yeah, I feel like it does.
Well, we are in the home of Sex and the City. We have avoided any major landmarks. 2 days ago, we ate some of the strongest magic mushrooms we've had and walked over the Williamsburg Bridge.
Are we going to get into that, are we?
Not really. It was too full on, everybody.
All right, well, you've opened up the can of worms, so let's talk about it. I've been itching to get some magic mushrooms for a little while, and I've been looking in New Zealand where they grow a lot, and no one's got them. Maybe because they're illegal, I don't know. Maybe I was coming a little
too hot.
They're
illegal to have in your possession. As soon as you pick them up, they're illegal. But when they're in the ground, if you eat them straight from the ground...
I have been led to believe the legal situation in New Zealand is that if you pick them, that's illegal because you're in possession of a controlled substance. However, if you find them, put your hands behind your back, bend down and just eat them off of the ground, fully legal. That's grazing, exactly. Got them on a technicality. Take that, motherfuckers.
So you've found none to pick nor graze.
It's real. I can't recommend anyone go looking for magic mushrooms themselves. It is so risky. You can fuck it up real easily, really well. So I don't mess with that. I leave it to the professionals.
Why is it because of the...
There's very similar looking ones that will kill you.
Yeah. Thankfully, magic mushrooms have a 100% track record of treating everyone very kindly.
So Guy has been putting up with me going, man, I want to get some mushrooms. And I ended up literally Googling it. I was like, New York City. And I was just, for about 3 hours, I was just online looking. And I fucking found them. Some guy had just posted his cell phone number 3 months ago on a forum. And I texted it once I got my SIM card from AT&T. Thanks, AT&T.
What? Huge shout out to AT&T. The New York City of cell phone providers.
And I was like, hey, man, sorry to bother you. Have you still got psychedelic mushrooms? He was like, yeah. I was like, can I come around in an hour? He's like, yeah.
So I was with Tim at the time. He left immediately. And then we linked up.
It felt like God opened a window.
About 2 hours later. And what did the man... it was a man, wasn't it?
It was a dude.
And what did the man say when you arrived to buy the magic mushrooms? He said... He took a bunch of molly out of his...
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what he did, not what he said. He said, here you go, and then produced... I've never seen molly before in like...
What does it look like?
It was crystallized. I thought it was like meth or something. I thought he was giving me some crystal meth. I got very freaked out. I was like, what's this now? Is this a new form of...
It sounds like the guy's running a pretty rigid system.
Yeah, he doesn't know what he's up to.
He's got the same accounting practice as I do at our merch table.
He was like, sorry, what were you after? And I was like, mushrooms, there's disgust. And he was like, oh, yeah, true. And he just pulls out from another pocket a huge bag. Anyway, I feel embarrassed.
You'll be surprised to hear that the mushrooms this otherwise seemingly pretty switched on gentlemen provided were some of the strongest substances I could imagine.
It's insane. We walked...
17 kilometers.
Yeah, what's that in miles? Like 13 miles across... 4.5 hours.
We walked through and into quite a lot of our own problems, and we live to tell the tale. And here we are now at Littlefield.
We're alive.
It's been a
so the movie guy.
Yeah, the movie. you keep saying.
What I love is that I came to New York City. You moved to New York City to do this live show 2 years ago, which is good if you plan it far ahead. I came here from Auckland, and we didn't do any Sex and the City-related activities. We didn't watch it in any Sex and the City-related place. We just banged it on in your apartment. Just sat watching this fucking TV with the 50th screening of Sex and the City on. And I tell you what, doesn't get any better on that 50th watch.
I struggle to imagine many environments in which we could have watched it that would improve the raw data. I am coming around to the idea that this movie will not change week to week, that it is fixed, it's locked off, it more or less remains in its state, almost like it was done in 2008. That's not to say the performances don't change, but the movie doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? We all on the same page? To be honest, it was not the watch that I'd promised myself a few episodes ago. It was pretty disrespectful.
Let's be honest.
It was two men in a room, you packing a suitcase before we travel to known shithole Chicago tomorrow morning.
Maybe I'll release all of the live episodes after we've completed all of them. Maybe that's what
put this one out tonight, brother.
I don't know, man. I don't know about that. No, you're right. So, look, there was some forward planning involved. It wasn't totally disrespectful. Before we kicked off, I got all of my stuff into the lounge so I could do things while maintaining eye contact with Big. Because as we know, if he thinks, you give him an inch.
He'll take a mile.
He will.
That's why they call him Mr. Big.
And come on it.
He takes big liberties. Big strokes.
Yeah.
Oh.
I love live reactions to our commentary. No, too far.
Whenever we talk about jizz in a private room, I'm always like, oh, I tell you, the people are going to love this.
Yeah, I know.
And you bring up jizz in front of a live audience and you can hear the groans.
Whoops. So I was packing in front of the tally. You were getting yourself ready as well. It wasn't a VR watch, that's for sure. It wasn't the...
Probably a welcome change, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
Just to kick off a conversation about the film, I'll tell you my shining light, which was this week, known asshole Carl, a partner at Mr. Big's firm, probably one of the more, in a world of confident characters, one of the more confident characters, he heckles Samantha during her speech, and the heckles aren't directed at Samantha, they're directed towards Mr. Big's checkered past in terms of having two previous marriages. He says to the groom, when he goes, "Here, there's a word he's heard before," and everyone sort of jeers him, but he is not cowed at all by the fact that no one likes his bits. He's like, okay, I see how it is.
Yeah,
you want more of Daddy Carl? I'll give you more of Daddy Carl. And he keeps going, I can't remember the next one, but all the way to Smith, he goes, hey,
hold the phone, you can't remember the next one.
Can you?
Wait, did you already say there's a word he's heard before?
Yeah.
Here's hoping, John.
Ah, nice. What?
Just leave me have it. I'm away from home.
I don't know about this new character you've taken on.
He wears loud shirts and apparently gets very scared when he's not in New Zealand.
Yeah. I loved his energy. I thought he was a disruptor this week from what is the norm, from the usual rhythm of the movie and the characters contained therein. He was someone who came in here and said, you know what? Fuck all of this. Fuck the wedding. I don't care about Carrie. I don't care about Big. I'm a partner at a goddamn firm. Mm. I don't think he cares about the firm. He employs Big and no one colorblind, illiterate, you know, a jizz fiend. And that's not to criticize any three of those component factors by themselves. But if you are hiring at a high-powered finance firm...
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's like what they say about when you lose one sense, the others gets heightened. You know that movie Blind Fury?
No.
It's good. I think it's from the mid-90s, and it's like a kung fu action movie, except it's American-made, and the guy's blind, but he's an incredible fighter. It's sort of like Daredevil, like he can kind of hear people
coming. Because he's got great sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe Big's colour blindness and lack of ability to read has honed his financial muscles.
His eye for numbers.
Exactly. It'd be like you at the merch table. You're killing it out there, man.
Yeah. So what I'd do is when we'd sell
one's
something...
One's no problem. Fives, yeah. You got it.
I'd mark it. I was marking it all down and I was doing the change. It was the smartest I felt literally in years.
You did really
you.
Well. You did
but
really well.
No, I'd like to go back to this premise of Blind Fury because I've been thinking a lot about bats recently.
Okay.
And I used to be scared of bats, but I'm not scared of bats. Have I talked about this with you?
No.
Okay, great. I used to be scared of bats, but I have grown fond of bats. I think it's
Thank
more
you.
Likely a bird will fly into you. Hey. It's
Could
nice.
Not.
Yeah,
Could
no,
not.
It's good. I liked you the whole
My
time.
My name's Tim Batt. There's probably a couple of people here who don't know what this podcast is, who've been brought along. My name's Tim Batt.
Yeah. I love you, Tim, yeah. But I've grown to like regular bats. I think it's more likely that a bird would find you than a bat because bats use sonar.
Right.
And that means that sonar is like where you put a noise out and it bounces back, right? So you know where everything is.
Is your definition of something you like something that won't hit you?
It's not, yeah, I guess, because not wholesale, but with regards to bats, I was always afraid of them because they have like quite terrifying faces and they're nocturnal and they're just like...
They're quite cute.
Oh, some of them are really cute, but some of them, they've got...
New Zealand's got a great... We've only got one bat, I think, and it's little.
Yeah.
Little wee dude. Beautiful little bat. But so just gorgeous.
One
species.
No,
yeah. No, I like this, actually.
Yeah, one species, also one bat.
Yeah. He flies around distributing presents because... It's unseasonably warm for Santa Claus, you see, so we entrust a bat to get it done in the summertime.
Yeah, sure, yeah, that's right.
He's good at barbecuing. We can fly. It makes more sense than a fat human, doesn't it? Just rolling around with reindeer.
Well, obviously...
Where's the sense in that? How did the reindeer thing become attached to Santa Claus?
Does no one know? Finland.
Finland. Is it good? No, let's not get into that. I like that. The answer is Finland.
The answer, as
always.
And we always.
Are finished.
Yeah. Okay.
With that. Oh, no, we hate it. Even I hate it.
Hard earned. Thank you.
It was like... That's it's what like when you burp and you get a spot, you're like, whoa, fuck, that was worse than I was expecting.
Yeah.
But I did it.
That was... that was good. I really felt that groan. But no, so that was my shining light. And also, I think bats are cool now. And I didn't used to think that. But the other one more question before we move on is, because you know how, like you look at, say, it's another animal, but you look at a monkey, and they seem so coordinated. Like they're so good at swinging from branch. You never see a monkey falling. I never see monkeys falling down. They're so coordinated. But there's got to be, amongst all the monkeys, there's got to be less coordinated monkeys. Monkeys who do not have the same ability to control their body. And so the same would be true, I imagine, with bats, where they have bad, wonky sonar.
I think humans are the only species that got so advanced that we allowed people who aren't super great at not dying to persist. Like with other animals, there's a natural attrition that happens. Where it's like, if you're bad at falling out of trees and you're a monkey, you don't get to procreate. It's kind of, it just sort of
I mean, you've got to imagine, it would be a huge turnoff in the monkey community, wouldn't it? Can you imagine Booty calling another monkey and just hearing them fall?
Here I come. Whoa!
And they fucking climb back up with a wonky arm. I'm not going to fuck you now, Greg.
Is that sad? I feel sad about that.
Nah, it's not sad. Right. Survival of the fittest.
I'm projecting sort of human morals onto the animal kingdom. Yeah. Should I be doing that? Don't know.
Hey, man, do what you want.
I'm a vegan now. I feel like I can, although I'm the worst vegan I've ever met.
No.
You've seen me eat a cheeseburger on this trip.
Yeah, you're still vegan.
Okay. Thanks, man.
So what was your mine was Carl, what was yours?
This is going to sound like a cop-out, but it's true. There's a woman who sits next to Carl, who I've never mentioned, but I've loved her for
presumably,
the last 20 watches.
Presumably Carl's partner.
Possibly.
She looks at him. She's the only one who looks remotely fondly at him when he hurls his...
No, but that's what I like about her. She definitely at least works with him. She looks to be, to my mind, 15 years his junior, probably. And
Carl's the kind of dirty dog who would date that low down.
But she looks to me very sophisticated and smart. I don't know if she'd put up with a Carl. So it leads me to believe that she is a up-and-coming person in the firm. What is the firm? It's a financial firm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's like a trader, like a good trader. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just like her?
I like what she does when Carl makes his shit calls.
What does she do?
Well, it's like a facial expression, which is to say, that's fucking goofy, dude, like you're making an ass of yourself. But it's not big enough to have any repercussions at work. She's kind of stone-faced, but just allows enough to creep on there.
And yeah, well, if we do look at her as an aspiring partner, there is a very clever, sort of almost manipulative quality to the way she eggs Carl on to keep making a fool of himself in this public space, knowing full well that when he vacates the throne, she's going to slide on in.
That's it.
That's great.
She's not too mean about it because you come for the king, you best not miss. Instead is creating a little honey trap.
I've always read her as sort of being as nothing but support, but there's a more sinister motive underneath this.
By the way, she's on screen for a second and a half, just so everyone knows. No joke.
Yeah.
Do you want to do any questions, by the way?
There's another thing I want to talk about, which is I thought this today and I said it out loud to you, which is because you were complaining that we don't meet any of the extra characters at the rehearsal dinner. We've got no notion of how the actual dinner and the surrounding drinks and socializing goes. Mm. We just see people, you know, we catch... It's not that I would like the movie to run for longer and to see the entirety of the event. But
please don't interpret that as our answer to this.
But it's just, you know, like in Sex and the City 2, we get to meet these characters who are second or third to the story, and we get to know them in a way that in Sex and the City, we don't. We are trapped on an island with the leads, with the protagonists, and it is fucking... And honestly, I'm going to be honest with you guys right now. I know I've put on a brave face for 49 episodes. It's really infuriating, and... But at the rehearsal dinner, we don't really get a sense or a feel for any of this. And this is all part of what leads me to the conclusion that, you know, we've talked about that Big has a serious dearth of friends. He's got no close male. He's got no friends, really, beyond Carrie.
You said today, I bet Big would have stayed and gone and got married if he had a single friend at the wedding.
And that's what I want to talk about. Not even at the wedding. If he'd had a friend who was with him the night before, if he had a friend who was with him the morning of, if he had a friend who was in the car with him on the way to the wedding, he's just like indulging every terrified whim. It's no way to live.
You're not wrong. And maybe that's like that is the hidden moral of the story, which does, you know, it's congruent with the themes of Sex and the City, which is all about friendship, isn't it?
That's the themes of Sex and the City. Friendship is the themes of Sex and the City.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what's written down on the vision board.
Yeah.
Themes, friendship.
Friendship?
Nothing more. But I truly believe that. And I know that we can't change history, and spoiler, they get married anyway, but we could save ourselves roughly an hour and a half if he had a friend in the car with him.
I love it when we get plans on these podcast episodes to go, you know, I'll just shave a bit of time off. It'd be a nice little shortcut in the story. Let's not do any of this.
Look, so my mental health is deteriorated and deteriorating rapidly still, but you don't need to point it. People can join the dots themselves, Tim.
Do you know what I love?
No.
I love that we've misjudged the number that we have to do, but only by one. If you stack up the live episodes versus how many we've got left, we're going to end up watching the movie 53 times.
Not necessarily. We could watch it a few times as a hobby.
Oh, oh, how dare you. How offensive.
How would you feel if I snuck off and just started watching it in private?
No joke. I'd be really worried. I'd be concerned. I would go to your partner, Charleston, and be like, can we just chat about Guy for a second? Because we need to figure this out. We need to look after him. I'd be so concerned if you did that.
Well, I'm just saying it's a possibility.
It would be... I can't think of an equivalent. It's bad. Don't do that. You've worried me with the suggestion. I'm really getting spun out thinking about that as a possibility. But it's
okay.
Not a possibility.
It's all cool, baby. Before I propose that, you like that we've missed it by one.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, a baker's dozen's 13. It's like a worst idea of 52 is 53.
I think it's good. It's a perfect representation of the accuracy with which we've executed this premise.
Yeah.
Which is to say...
Hey, they got pretty close.
Yeah, almost. Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, they did it. Cool.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Should we dig into...
Yes. Dear listener, we have solicited for some questions from the audience written on various bits of card.
And we'll now read and answer some of these.
Sorry, what cracked me up is I read one of them. It's very funny. I'm glad we did this.
If you still got a tickle from it, you should read it out.
In very nice handwriting, I hasten to add. Have you two ever kissed?
Surely.
Either way, can you please almost kiss or fully kiss now? And then a smiley face.
That's a terrifying precedent to set with this number of cards. Like, if these people
this
are
starting
as coordinated
point.
And intelligent as I think they might be, we are about 15 cards from fellating one another.
What are the
give
rules
us a kiss.
Here?
Right, give us a kiss.
Should we kiss?
We love each other. It's okay.
That's our first kiss.
Is it?
On the lips, yeah, definitely. I like that. Is it?
I'm sure I've kissed you before.
I don't think you've kissed me on the lips.
I think sometimes I want to and you don't like it. Someone's encouraged a real kiss. And no. Carrie's authorial career is confusing.
I like that word.
Yeah. It's sort of the R's linked up with the I, so it looks like orthonial, but it's got to be authorial.
Like author, right?
Yeah, yeah. Authorial career is confusing. Have you been able to piece together any kind of trajectory? And have the other gals read her book?
They haven't.
Maureen from NYC. Thank you so much for this fantastic question, Maureen. So shall we address the first half, which is, have we been able to piece together any kind of trajectory for Carrie's writing career? Because what we do know is that the start of this movie is in the span of everything that has come before it. She's written three books.
20 years, I think we're dealing
with. Yeah, three books, which appear to have financed quite a glamorous lifestyle.
It's incredible when you think about it. On average, one book every 6.66 years. The devil's number. No, that's not right. The math's off. A little under seven.
If we piece together, and I have recently figured out that Sex and the City and Sex and the City 2 do exist in the same cinematic universe... The book that Carrie is working on and reading what she calls excerpts, but which are pretty obviously improvised ramblings at a reading of, is presumably the book that is released in Sex and the City 2. A book that, if you remember correctly, gets panned in The New Yorker.
Yes.
Suggesting
I said yes, like it was amazing I remembered a film I've seen 52 times.
Which would mean that her trajectory, which... I feel like it's been, there was promise, I guess. She got a lot of cool articles. She had articles in Vogue and presumably other, you know, couture fashion magazines.
When they lead up to her book.
Well, just at the beginning of her career, the outset.
Yeah, right, yes.
Then put out three books. I feel like showed promise. Everyone banked on the promise, read the first one. They thought, it's okay, it's your first book, though, so we'll give you the benefit of the doubt and say it's better than it is.
Yeah.
The second book, the difficult second book. Shit. The Sophomore. Third book, shit. The fourth book, shit. The trajectory, down, baby. All the way down to the ground. That's what I think.
How is she, I guess, wow.
She's with Big.
Yeah.
The financial savant.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think any of the characters have read her books? It's a great question.
I really don't. And I find it so, that's a scene I want to see. Where Samantha, a publicist... is struggling to both placate Carrie and be like, no, the book was amazing. Be like, what was your favourite part? Don't make me choose. The whole thing was so, how can you pick one part of your book?
Yeah.
I like to view the book as a whole, and it's flawless. Do you want a drink?
What's Mr. Big doing? Anything else? I like the idea that
Big
the three
can't
of them...
read it, which is sad.
I like... It's probably for the best he'd leave her otherwise.
Are they a perfect couple? Because they complement each other so well. Because her career is she's an author and he is illiterate. So there's a nice kind of yin and yang.
I think in the vacuum of how these two people are, it is a perfect relationship. But in the real world, you want some semblance of support from your partner.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the three of them not having read any of her books and then reading them and being like, what the fuck? This is everything! Carrie, you bet, you know, sitting her down, taking her money. You'd be furious.
I reckon, in my heart of hearts, Samantha Jones would write a better book than Carrie Bradshaw. She's got a better command of language. She's so quippy. I think she's led a way more interesting life, but she's not, what's the word? Like, she doesn't over... what's the verb of make yourself important? Just an importicize her own life.
She's not self-important?
Yeah, like she doesn't...
Assert?
Oh, I love this, like in crowdsource, what? Assert? Yeah, she doesn't like over-assert her adventures in catching dicks, essentially. Yeah. It would just be great tales put into book form.
If Samantha wrote one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Fun
I feel like
stories. It'd be like a whole bunch of short stories.
It's a shame we never got to spend any time with Samantha in her prime because all of her quips, which are meant to be fun and snappy and light in the movies, feel so like leaden. And here she's like, oh, remember me? Yeah. I fuck. And everyone goes, yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
not
yeah,
her
yeah.
fault, though. I think that's the gal's fault for not being as fun as her. They've dulled her, you know, like a knife.
And do you think that's why she does things like lash out at Miranda when they're on holiday?
I talked about this while we were watching this episode. So this is crazy, everybody. We've got Miranda, who is suffering the breakdown of a marriage, and there's a kid involved, which, as I've said, I personally feel like that adds, you know, several factors of drama to the
situation. I've gone on the record as saying I think that makes it easier and better. But Tim...
We'll agree to disagree.
The endless well of empathy that he somehow is seems to find a way to think that a child being involved in a divorce somehow makes it more complicated. I don't know. I don't know how he sees the world, but this is just what he thinks.
The gals have given no love, kindness, empathy, or even sympathy to Miranda, who's going through this terrible situation, and thrown everything behind Carrie Bradshaw for some inextricable reason. Probably because they're guilt-ridden from not reading her books.
Probably because Sarah Jessica Parker's an executive producer as well.
Probably that too.
It's a couple of factors working here.
And the first moment that Miranda has in the film after breaking up with Steve, literally an exhalation of breath as they're relaxing in Mexico, she's sitting back and she said, "Ah, the sun feels nice." She's bathing. She's sun bathing. And there
I never understood that turn of phrase.
I still don't. I don't think I revealed anything by that, did I?
No, she's bathing in the... No, you go.
Yeah, all right. And the immediate response to that is Samantha goes, "Geez, honey. Oh, fuck, what's the wording?
Wax much?
Wax much, that's it."
Someone watched the movie today? Is that who was yelling wax much? Did anyone watch the movie today, just quickly? No. Nice.
I love the indignant no.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
An audience after our own hearts.
Such a slap down. Yeah. She has one moment of happiness. Yeah, the audience as well. But the gals on Miranda. Miranda's like, "Hey, you know what? I can enjoy this one moment. We're all together in Mexico. I'm relaxing. Hey, what's up with your fucking pubic here, Miranda? Get fucked." You know, like,
hey, Miranda, fuck your decision to have autonomy over your body, you bag of shit and hair.
That decision you made about yourself? Wrong.
And then Carrie and Charlotte silently go, "Yeah, nice."
And then the situation ends with Miranda storming off because she is completely understandably upset by this.
And, you know, at which point she says something and Miranda goes, "I'm fine."
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, no, you're not. You're cross.
No, she is cross, but she's wanting to, like, not ruin everyone's time completely. She wants to express her anger but still maintain, you know, a bit of a semblance of holiday to what they're all doing. Sorry, vacation. And...
Really? Is that one?
Huh?
You don't say holiday?
It's my
holiday. Holiday's better.
Really interrupting me here.
Oh, yeah, you are in flow. So keep going.
Miranda leaves.
Don't let me break your flow.
And the very next thing that anyone says is Carrie says, "We should have dinner at the restaurant tonight."
And everyone goes, "Oh, my God, Carrie's better.
Carrie's back."
Oh, what a relief.
I've got to do something to get me out of this Mexicoma. Carrie, you made a little joke.
Yeah.
And Charlotte laughs. Everyone's happy. You just fucking decimated Miranda.
I imagine that there's a lot of footage on the cutting room floor of Carrie and Charlotte piling on. And they're like, "We've got to take that out. It's too full on. We'll just go straight to the joke."
It's nuts.
Yeah, no.
Crazy.
That is crazy stuff. This one here on the green card reads, "Do you think your friendship could survive a podcast?" It's not the whole question, but it very well could be. "Do you think your friendship could survive a podcast where you don't suffer so much?" Can you imagine a podcast where you and I engage in something that we enjoy?
I honestly think there is so much humour to suffering. Light suffering, you know, like
self-enforced suffering.
Totally. Even Jackass was too much for me because I really, really don't enjoy watching people get injured.
Oh, I used to love Jackass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was so funny.
I enjoy like aspects of it, but when they actually like fuck themselves up, even America's Funniest Home Videos, which is a show that carried in New Zealand for, and I think is probably still on, but that was in prime time when I was
You're
a
talking
kid.
About Fail Army, baby.
I'm talking about Fail Army. I'm sitting with the host of the
great Fail Army
right here. I can't watch this shit because people genuinely get so fucking injured. I'm like, this sucks. I hate this, but I like a bit of light suffering. Self-imposed light suffering. I think the show that got it best, which will mean nothing being in America, but Back of the Y, which was New Zealand's kind of equivalent of Jackass, which was made by a dude who I got to work with later. And it was great because it was like dumb storylines.
That legend fired a t-shirt cannon into your throat.
Yeah, you almost killed me.
Yeah.
But in fairness, he has my name tattooed on his body. So Well, we really lost.
You've got Patrick Schwarzenegger tattooed on your body.
Fuck, I forgot.
Everyone's a loser in all of these anecdotes.
I keep forgetting.
I think we could. I think. Remember when we last ended the podcast? I remember thinking to myself, like going on other people's podcasts and being like, "So what? You guys all just get together in a room and you just have talk about something you like? Wow, what an interesting way to approach the medium." I had no idea this was an option.
I think our friendship could definitely survive it. I don't know if my psyche could, because I don't have the confidence to think it would be any good.
Yeah, but it would be. And more than that, I think what led us back to this, it's not that a positive podcast would impact the friendship. I think it's the absence of podcasting that didn't take a toll on the friendship. It sort of removed a crutch of communication between us. This is why we dug this thing up. I haven't listened back to any of these episodes, and never will I. But I was going through my notes from the first watch today, and I think...
Of this season?
Yeah. And what they are, what they're representative of is the state of mind I was in, which was so excited to be doing this with you again. And like, the misguided notion that digging up the podcast concept will be
this
fun.
Combined with our first kiss, it's a special episode you're all at, I tell you what.
But if I read, my notes from that, it's like all the things that I've grown to hate, I love. When I see Samantha winking at Carrie, I'm like, I love that wink. You know, all these moments which I now watch and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And, you know, like, it's just, I don't know.
Are you saying that's an analogy for the friendship where you were like, I'm so keen to get back into this friendship with Tim, and by now it's like, what the fuck is this guy doing
in the city? The friendship's good. I love you and I love having you here, but like the medium through which it exists is still it's broken.
It is and it isn't. Pretty full room we got here, Monty. Look around. A lot of beautiful people came out.
No.
Fine, Mitch.
You put that applause back in your pocket.
May I?
Please.
Do you think Sex and the City 3 could have worked without Samantha and Mr. Big? Oh, without both of them? I missed it with both.
That question suggests that Sex and the Cities 1 and 2 functioned with them.
Take that, mattress pikelet, you son of a bitch.
You could do literally any, I don't know, I think yes is the answer. I mean, it wouldn't have made a difference to us.
So, okay, what I'd feel like you're saying is if you take the assumption that Sex and the City 1 and 2 worked and you removed... By that metric, and then you remove these two characters. Sure, by whatever you've defined working as, it continues.
So we've got Big is killed out of the movie, so presumably we see Chris Noth having a heart attack in the shower.
Yeah. Oh, did you guys know
this
about
this
that?
This was the rumoured central plot point for Sex and the City 3, the now defunct promise of another sequel, was that Mr. Big dies of a heart attack, and then the movie is centred around the friends coaching Carrie through the loss of her partner. And Kim Cattrall balked at the idea and
said,
I'm not going to be in a movie where my entire role is just supporting Carrie Bradshaw.
Again.
Yeah. And rightly so. It would be if I think about watching Carrie sulk through New York City and Mexico today, and then watching her traipse through the Middle East and just suck. I mean, the idea of watching her commiserate the loss of Mr. Big would not function.
It absolutely wouldn't. And I'll go so far as to say a Sex and the City 3 that is just Mr. Big and Samantha would be better than the first two films. And
actually a wonderful bookend because in the very first episode of Sex and the City, Samantha is pursuing she wants to have sex with Mr. Big.
I just burped. I think when someone might have taken a photo with a flash. I'm not sure.
No, someone's about to ride a motorbike.
Very cool.
I hope it's loud.
Guy, this is so weird. I've never seen Guy get genuinely kind of mad about anything, but you've recently really teed off about motorbikes.
They're too noisy. They're so noisy.
Okay.
My people, yeah.
There's a motorbike pointed through the window of the venue.
It's good.
Just pointed
it's got a really powerful LED light blasting into my eyeball. It's loud and oral
It's affecting the screen. That's all right. Cool. There's nothing to see there.
All of that to say, I'm with you. I think the movie would be better if it was just those two.
Yeah.
And I would love to see them going at it. Mr. Big colouring outside the lines, Samantha, and Noah's sex-crazed maniac.
Yeah. Match made in heaven.
Absolutely.
A weird, deviant heaven.
What do you do to get out and enjoy a day?
It's so cute.
If I'm really going to enjoy a day, I'll usually start it with a walk. Before I do anything, I wake up. As soon as I'm awake, I go out. I take a stroll around the block. Then I might stop in at a coffee shop, have a coffee, read a book, perhaps a pastry, if I'm feeling cheeky. And then I guess I'd hang out with some friends, ideally be productive. After that, when I'm not being productive anymore, I'd go for a run. All of a sudden, it's nighttime. Time for a beer with the pals. Later on, maybe watch a funny TV show and smoke some of the illicit drug, marijuana, before I lay my weary head down in bed. That's a good day for me. What do you got, Tim? I appreciate the applause breaks, but we've got to get through more questions.
The time is 6:45 a.m. I have been asleep for approximately 4 hours. My wife rises from the bed, getting ready to go to work. The shower wakes me up. I think I've got to watch Sex and the City 2, the second half of it. The Sex and the City 1. Maybe Sex and the City 2. Maybe that's my perfect day. A bit of respite. So I watch it. Not in VR would be my perfect day. Flash forward. It's 8 o'clock. I've missed the opportunity to have a shower, but I have just had enough time to make a coffee while Guy Montgomery and myself struggled to get a Skype call to work correctly through a combination of Wi-Fi and 4G to see what will have the lowest amount of latency. Record an episode, realise I didn't hit the record button. Jump back on, record another episode.
Jesus Christ. Viscerally uncomfortable for him.
Guy said it's viscerally uncomfortable for him. No, I can't even continue the charade.
That's a pretty good morning, though, isn't it?
It's the opposite of that is. I would literally... anything that doesn't involve watching one of these four movies that we've seen is all right by me. Pretty much anything. I could be mowing the fucking lawn.
And that is the benefit of the podcast, is the bar you have set yourself for an enjoyable day is that low.
I had a really enjoyable day recently, which was born of failure. So I think this is a parable with a moral. May I share it?
Yeah, go for it, man.
In New Zealand, there is a competition called the 48-Hour Film Competition, where you've got to make an entire short film, now a maximum of 5 minutes in length, within one weekend. You get given some set criteria to meet so that they're making sure that you've made it within the weekend. Me and a friend, Paul Williams, very talented comedian and musician, decided to...
He's got a great album on Spotify, Paul Williams. Look that up, by the way.
You should. We
it's
did one
surf music.
Together as a twosome, and generally you need a lot more people to make a movie than that. And we approached it with a pretty relaxed attitude. We didn't kick off till very late. Normally... You want to finish the script on the... It starts at 7 o'clock on the Friday night. You stay up until about 12 or 1 a.m. You finish the script and then you start shooting first thing on Saturday. We were writing the script the whole of Saturday. And we created a great story about a little robot that wanted to write a song. And it was beautiful. And then we got to 10 p.m. Saturday before we had shot a frame of it, which is bad. And we shot some of it, and then it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and Paul just goes to me, "Hey, man, this isn't possible, eh?" I was like, "What's that?" He goes, "Well, we've got a shot list here of 50 shots. We've been filming for like 3 hours, and we've got 4 of them." And I was like, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's impossible. There's no way we could finish this." And he said, "Do you want to just, I think we should probably throw in the towel." And I was like, "Yeah, we should just bail on it."
Where the fuck was this attitude 46 episodes ago?
So we did. We threw in the towel, we bailed on it. And then my Sunday, I got a light sleep in. And then I fucking got a haircut, mowed the lawns, and then met up with walkout boy Nick Sampson for a beer because he was in the neighborhood. It was fucking mint.
And it was not like a spectacular day, but there was something about the expectation of what that day was going to be being superseded. Yeah. I thought I was going to be sleep deprived editing a bad
film. It's a beautiful feeling.
All of that got taken away from me. It'd be like going in to do this 52 more times, and then on the second time, the world was just like, hey, Tim, you don't have to do
it. What about this?
It was like, whoa.
What if we cancelled our shows in nine shitholes, Chicago, Portland, and Los Angeles?
I don't know about that, man.
It would be the same feeling. All right, goddamn Dostoevsky. What is Samantha's quote from the theme song, and do you deliberately slow it down sometimes to fuck with us? Part one of a two-part question.
Very good. We'll hear the second part.
No, we'll answer that first.
Very good. Just as I intended. So that quote by Kim Cattrall is not from... Oh, yeah, it's from our theme song. It's nothing to do with Sex and the City. It's her and her husband on a video that has made its way to YouTube, where she is announcing herself as a, I want to say scat singer, but that sounds like the wrong word.
It's a real life interview with Kim Cattrall where she says she's a poet and her partner is a jazz musician who plays bass. And so upright bass. So he's playing a bass and she's sort of scatting over it. Although I have since discovered that this is not an improvised poem she's performing, but a written poem by someone else that she is reciting.
She didn't even write that.
Yeah. Does it make it better or worse?
Way worse. But at the end of the video, outside of the song, she says, whatever is said in the theme song. I don't listen to it that much. I just put it in.
We work together and hear it together and we get a nice rhythm and it's something along those lines.
You guys know because you hear it every time.
And we go for it, yeah. So
we go for it.
Yeah.
And we go
and
for
so,
it.
And what about...
So I've been slowing it down by 1% every episode. But then I've seen people like on the subreddit being like, is this fucking like occasionally slowing them down? Like, I've been slowing down the whole time. So what I've done, what I'm going to do for the last ones, and I started doing this a couple episodes ago, is I'm going to slow it down by 10.
That's great.
And what it's supposed to do is emulate what we're going through. It is the audio expression of what is happening to our minds. So what you're hearing is Guy and I, it's our brain turning to putty.
That's a very good answer. The second part, and this is going to be, I realize this is going to be the last question we'll have time to answer.
Sure thing.
The rest of them, thank you so much for these submissions. I'm suggesting to you now, Tim, we do a special friend zone
in which we
address these remaining questions at a later date.
Yep.
So we're going to answer this, and then you'll see what happens. I think Carrie's observation about Charlotte shitting herself is 100% spot on. Evidence. When Charlotte and Carrie are furniture shopping and Charlotte is like, my life is so good, Carrie's like, yeah, but you shit yourself.
Direct quote.
But Charlotte seems to have forgotten. Carrie's observation that Charlotte's life isn't as good as she thinks because she has shit herself.
Honey, you shit yourself this year. I think you're done.
As someone who is on the record as having shat themselves more than most people in the previous years, I take umbrage with this. Because at some point you do forget you did it. And in doing that, you forget how significant that moment is to other people. We don't all have to... Like some bats have wonky sonar, some of us like to test the limits of our physical body to the point where we sometimes, maybe accidentally, after a house party with a bunch of 19-year-olds in Malibu, wake up the next morning, roll out the top of a camper van and shit their pants. That's just what some of us do. What do we do with the underpants? We throw them into the unoccupied lot across the fence. What do we do after that? How do we clean ourselves up? We pick our way through 10 comid teenagers until we find a bathroom in which we can clean ourselves up in the basin. Are we proud of ourselves? Surprisingly, yes.
How can we top this? What will have LA have in store for us this time, you know?
Well, I hope we're not hanging out with teenagers anymore because we are too old.
Yeah, that's the God's honest truth of it. Probably need to wrap it up.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming out. If you are living in Chicago, Portland, or Los Angeles, please, but we can't wait to visit, please buy a ticket and check out the shows. Thank you so much, New York. You've been a wonderful audience.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out. And we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.